This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
Discover more of our shows at soundrebel.co.uk.
Hi, welcome to the Keep Real Podcast, the show that explores real stories from real people with a focus on mental health. I'm Kim, and on this episode, we have the incredible and inspiring Jenna Campbell, the co-founder of the print magazine Northlass. We chat about why Jenna and Jess started the print magazine and how it champions women here in the North, the shifting landscape of success, and managing your mental health in lockdown. We've actually known each other for quite a few years now anyway, haven't we? I can't remember how we started talking, but I know it was through Northlass. I don't know if it was I emailed you like, oh, I love what you're doing. I am running Keep Real. I think that was how we started talking anyway, wasn't it?
I should suspect so. I think in the early days of Northlass, we got a lot of emails, and I think our enthusiasm was probably matched. And every time we got an email, I was like, yes, absolutely, they sound amazing. So yes, that's probably how it started. And I think we ran an article online, didn't we? We did a blog post.
Yeah, I think that was when I just started Keep Real, like officially, because I had the idea for such a long time, and I thought, oh, I want to get myself out there. And I've actually got one of your lovely magazines right here. So what motivated you to start Northlass?
Jess and I, so Jess, fellow co-founder and editor, we do Northlass together.
We miss you, Jess.
Yes, miss you, Jess. She's very, very busy with her new job. So she's passed over the mantle on this one. So we met, I think it would have been 2016 when we started working at Thomson Reuters, which is a media agency effectively, but we worked in the sort of law wing of it as editorial associates. So we were doing a lot of proofing, helping with subscriber emails, those sort of things, sort of very background job. You don't really hear or see much from editorial associates. And I think we both had a really big passion for writing and also where we're from. So Jess is from Bradford and I'm from Manchester and
the
North. And I think that was always sort of part of our friendship from when we, you know, started working together. But I think we both realised that we wanted to sort of go a bit further in our careers, and no fault of the business at all, but it was always meant to be sort of an interim job and we weren't permanent employees. So we sort of knew we'd either outgrow the role or that we needed probably to move on at some point. And I don't know what happened, but the sort of summer of 2017, I just said to her, I don't see a lot of opportunities. I don't really know in the North where to look as a woman at fellow women who are doing these sort of things. And I ended up putting across like a MEN, so Manchester Evening News article, looking at the top 100 women in business. But it didn't really strike a chord because a lot of the professions that they were in, whilst really admirable and really impressive, I couldn't see myself in them, or it's not something that in your early 20s you thought would necessarily be right for you. So a lot of them were, you know, senior MPs, or they'd been in politics for a long time, or they'd start their own business and they were almost millionaires. And I just thought, I don't know.
I can't relate to that. That's the thing.
How'd you get to that? Mm. And I think as well, there didn't seem to be the breadth of jobs that we also knew about were happening, but sort of low level. Whereas if you compare it to London and the creative industries and the sort of editorial job, publishing jobs, journalism jobs, like the platform there just seems so much bigger and so much more transparent. Yeah. Initially, it started out as a profiling of the North, and we should be telling people what's going on in the North of England. And then, I don't know, it just sort of, we sort of realised that as young women, we didn't really necessarily have the role models, and it wasn't because they weren't there, it was because they weren't getting the coverage. And I think that's when the penny dropped. The name was just sort of, I don't know, lass is what you call someone from the North, isn't it? So,
yeah.
And
it's very stereotypical, like the North, and that's what you,
I think, yeah, so, and it galvanises people when you hear it. Like, granted, some people call it Northern Lass or many, many variations, which is actually quite endearing. It doesn't bother me or faze me anymore. But at the beginning, I was very much like, it's North Lass. And you sort of say it with a bit of grip. But, you know, now it's really taken off, and I'm extremely proud of it, and I know Jess is as well, because it's opened so many doors for us as individuals in our careers, but also it's given us a chance to champion other women and what they're doing and actually put a spotlight on it, because you genuinely can do well for yourself in the North, and I still firmly stick by that, you know, 3 years on.
It's really refreshing, I think, because when, like as you were saying, you read like business magazines or you're trying to look for other women in creative industries or just in business in general, and it seems like you can't attain what they have at all. So you've bridged that gap between, like, actually women around the north are doing amazing things in their own right. It doesn't have to be millionaires. So you've destigmatized what it is to be running a business, essentially, and sharing people's stories. So what stories did you start off with?
We were very much novices. So I'd studied history and politics at uni, and Jess had done English. And, you know, we're both competent writers, but we weren't editors by any stretch of the imagination. But I just thought, you'd give it a go. So we started...
That's where everything starts.
You've got to start somewhere. I almost cringe now at, like, how inexperienced we probably were.
It's nice to reflect on where you've come from. I used to do my designs on Microsoft Paint, let's be real. And now it's like design software and things like that. And you have to cringe, but that's a good thing to do.
100%. And I'm trying to think where we started. I know that in the first issue we had Liz Cottam, who she's from like the Leeds area. She was on MasterChef quite a while back now, and she got to the semi-finals, and then she went and started her own restaurant called Home, which is just off Kirkgate, so sort of in between Leeds Markets and the main high street. And it's really inconspicuous, you wouldn't think it was there. It's sort of between Poundland and Superdrug, but it's this really foreboding, amazing sort of grand door, and you go up and it's just this beautiful, impeccable dining room and someone who truly cares about food and drink. And she ended up on doing MasterChef because of her mum. She went on once and then didn't really think she was ready for it. And then her mum passed away, sadly, in between. And it really sort of made her think to redo it and do it in her mum's honour, which those are the sort of stories that as soon as we had her story, I thought, that's it. We're also looking at the women who have inspired them. So there's a real chain and connection going on here. So we started with that. And really, we just sort of put calls out. We got an Instagram channel, we got Twitter, we started putting calls out for women, we started looking at things on Instagram that we thought were cool. And, you know, there was people like Meat Free, who are a DJ collective in Manchester. It was all quite, there was no necessary like thread going on to it, but just really across the creative industries and further afield, whether it be hospitality, whether it be craft, those sort of things. So we just started to really branch out and see what we could find. And then in terms of like printing, it was just learning on the job, really, and just working out what print specs were. We knew we wanted gold foil on the front and things like that. Like, with, you know, it is a aesthetically pleasing magazine.
It's a pretty one. I'm not gonna lie, I absolutely love it. So it's lovely to see where you've come from, because I know it used to be just the blog.
Yeah.
And then it's turned into a print magazine. So what was that transition like? When did the idea come about, like, we need to make a magazine?
So actually what happened is, I don't even know how it got into a magazine, but initially we were like, if we're going to make an impact, maybe we should do it in print. But we're like, we probably should have a website supporting it, so that, because we can't fit all that content into one magazine. And because it's self-funded, it, you know, the first two issues, Jess and I funded ourselves. So it was just saving, putting a little bit of money away, hence why we don't publish it as often as we'd like. At one point, we were going to try and do 2 a year, but even with a full-time job, it's a lot of work. And you know, we're not the only writers of it. So we started off with a print idea, sort of made it up as we went along, which is absolutely fine, because that's sometimes the best way to learn. And then the blog sort of followed. And admittedly, the blog has gained a lot of exposure and a lot more people visiting the last year, because we've been putting a lot more content out. But also, I think we've refined it. You know, we're really thinking about who we're asking and the features. And Jess has spearheaded this Women in the Workplace feature.
I love it. Which is brilliant. I was gonna ask you about that.
So,
I love it.
You know, it's really, really become focused, and I think that's working a lot better for us. And, you know, the first year of any project is, it's really difficult, because you're trying to prove yourself, not only to yourself, but like to other people, that it's worthwhile and getting involved with. And a lot of stockists, because we, you know, we stuck with a lot of independent bookshops and magazine shops, a few didn't get it. And I remember going to Nottingham once to visit a friend, and I knew there was a really nice little boutique magazine shop, and I thought, I'm gonna ask, he's gonna go for it. I'm almost, you know, overconfident in the idea at that point, and he just didn't get it. I was admittedly very let down, but then I thought, it's not for everyone, and it is niche. Supporting women in the north of England is a niche market. It's not the same as supporting women nationally or internationally, but I think that is a strength, and sometimes it's something for someone to learn about. And I think in that essence, it did prove that maybe people weren't ready for it, or they didn't necessarily care about women in the north and what they were doing. And that sounds kind of harsh, but I do think we get overlooked quite a lot of the time, and sort of told to just go to London or the south, because that's where the
100%.
Jobs are.
It's becoming more apparent in recent years
about the fact that it's not just London. I know that Alice Matthews, shout out to my garage, was interviewed by you, and she was talking about it's not, we don't just have to go to London anymore to make it, you know, big and successful. It's about being representative of where you come from, but also that there are opportunities up here. What is next for you guys? I know that you did a crowdfunding response. How was that?
Well, so for issue 3, we've had the content ready since last year, to be honest. And we work with a designer called Katie O'Rourke, who is brilliant. She's Manchester-based. We came across Katie, who did our second issue. We decided to switch to her because we really liked her style, and it was quite feminine, but also quite powerful. And I think that's what we are. Like, we're not too girly. And we also wanted to be taken seriously. And I think she is a lot of grit in her design. Like, there's lots of very mini markers of feminism in there as well. Like, the triangle is usually a marker of feminism. She's really woven that in beautifully. So we went with her again. We were happy to spread that cost between the two of us. But then we thought, we can't really afford to just pay it out again, because it is quite expensive printing a magazine of the sort of spec that we're at. And I won't bore you with the details, but just there's a lot more cost and expenditure than you'd think when you're making something quite bespoke, and on a really short print run, because we don't print hundreds and hundreds because we just haven't got the budget. So we thought, we'll go to a crowdfunder. I feel like crowdfunders and Kickstarters are quite a tricky one, because sometimes people just come out straight and they're just like, give me money. Whereas I think we've always felt quite, I don't know if it's where we're from and stuff, but we don't like asking for money or for help or something. And I just wanted an established brand. I think you'll understand that. And you almost want a reputation to hand over to people first and go, I promise you what we've made is good so far. So, like, trust in the money now that you're going to pledge to us, whether that's a pound or £50 if you so wish. But there's actual evidence of what we've made, and it's good quality and we believe in it, rather than first issue being like, oh, just give us some money. I think for both of us, that just isn't how we operate, and it's just not something that we wanted to do from the get-go. And then 3 years in, we thought, you know, I think we've done it. And interestingly, we didn't foresee what events were going to play out this year and stuff, but we managed to get the money in before March. So we've had that money in, and now we're just sort of in negotiations with different printers so we can get sort of the best deal and then get, you know, the maximum number of copies printed, basically.
I'm so happy with the response it got, because I understand and empathise with that about the whole crowdfunding and asking for money. Especially when you start your own business, you feel in the first instance apologetic for even trying. So it's great for you to be like, look, we're doing something amazing, please just help us. And you did it in such a intelligent and articulate way that people were just like, you know what, we've been seeing you from afar for years, you've been putting out these publications, shining a spotlight, there's no reason to not invest in that. So it was absolutely amazing to see that. So what is next for you? So you're looking at the printers now. Do you know when you're going to be hopefully bringing out the next issue?
Well, we're just negotiating on the foil, which is something that just like is our constant struggle. The foil is really expensive, and it is a really boring like publishing print issue, but you know, it's kind of a marker of ours. But we're looking at some different options, but we're almost over the line with one printer, so fingers crossed we can have it out sort of end of June. And our plan is probably to sell the majority online, and then I think we're going to shift to regional stockists going forward. So for the first two issues, we had stockists all over the UK, but I think in terms of like return on investment and just practicality of like what's going on and post and predictability of it, it's probably best if we send it out from our respective houses. So we'll split it down the middle and then divvy it up. It is very much like, I don't think people see that side of a magazine, the sort of, and you'll appreciate that running your own venture, but that late nights, weekends, finding any spare minute just to have, just to do all these things. Like, you know, like last time we sent it out, I had like 50 copies of it in like a random post office in the middle of Manchester, and the guy was honestly just so wide-eyed at me. He was like, what are you doing? And I was like,
I want that with my local.
I know. And eventually they get to know you, and they're like, they find it quite heartwarming, I'm sure. But you know, everybody's got to start somewhere, and you know, whilst we have our own jobs and stuff, I do think it's something quite special and what we're doing sort of in our own time. I mean, it's knackering, and you'll know that it's completely exhausting.
I think what you've done so well, what I really admire, is the fact that you've kind of like drawn the curtain and shown that grit through everything that you've ever done. So like when you look at a brand, you always think that it's just so pristine and it's like made from magic almost. But no one sees that side of it where it's, oh, I went to the post office and I'm in my spare bedroom trying to pack orders.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that you've got that balance so well, where it's like, it is that northern grit. It's that not afraid to show the ins and outs of what a magazine is, what entrepreneurship is. And I remember us talking about what is success, because we spoke about that off the pod. It was last year when we went out and we had lunch and we were talking about the struggles that women and men face about what is success, what is productivity. And I think we're questioning that even more now. So what do you think success looks like?
It's a really interesting question, and it's one that I've had a lot more headspace to think about in the last few months, given what's happening. So my current role, I'm an assistant editor of a magazine based in Stockport, and I've been furloughed from that, which is absolutely fine. And, you know, it's for the needs of the long-term business, and, you know, happily to play my part there. But it's given me a lot of downtime, which I've not had in a good
ages.
I won't even exaggerate, probably 10 years. I've not stopped working since my GCSEs, and I've just constantly sought to prove myself and what I'm doing. And I think that's what success used to be to me, almost like proving you were working, proving you had something to show. Whereas now, to be honest, success is... it's very different for me. It's actually sleeping properly. It's taking care of my mental health a lot better rather than running on empty constantly, which is something I'm really guilty of. And I feel kind of hypocritical for, because I tell other people constantly, like, slow down, chill out.
Same.
Like, no one cares if you don't post tomorrow. Like, I know that deep down, but also social media is the epicenter of, like, comparison culture. And as a young woman, I'm intelligent enough to know the limit, but it doesn't mean I don't go past it often. It doesn't mean I'm not on there constantly going, well, she's more successful than me because, you know, she probably stayed up two extra hours last night than I did. I've got to do that tomorrow. And I'm not an idiot. Like, I know how to be responsible with these things, but success has shifted a lot for me. I've always had quite big dreams and always wanted to be a journalist, and I'm constantly still working out how best to do that. But in the last few months, success can sometimes literally just be being able to get out of bed and go and do that run or that workout, or, I don't know, mastering a new skill. It is reflection. Success is probably reflecting, maturing on where you've come, really. And I think I'm very, very hard on myself, and I know Jess is the same, and we're both very ambitious people, and we're constantly not thinking it's not good enough, when actually we're both doing really well at what we do.
Smashing it. And I think it's that weird self-worth and self-belief system where I think it's a British culture of just feeling quite apologetic without even doing anything. Like, oh I'm sorry. Even when it comes to being ambitious, you feel apologetic for being ambitious in the first place. And then there comes that system of not necessarily knowing how to navigate that in a way. And I think for me, like, success, it's wonderful to see success shift where it's now reflecting on the fact that it's not working 12 hours a day. It's not working into the night. It's not bombarding yourself with so many tasks that you feel overwhelmed. It's about, sleeping right and taking care of your mental health. And I think within these such difficult times, we're actually having to reflect on what is success for a lot of us.
I mean, I think it's tricky because... and I might, under normal circumstances, I wouldn't have had this downtime, so to speak. So I think I would have continued to work myself relentlessly in my job and with Northlass and with other bits of writing and, you know, wanting people to know that I'm available for commissions and all these different things, when actually, like, this isn't necessarily a positive situation. It quite clearly is not. And it's brought a lot of hardship and a lot of sadness, really, to a lot of people. But I think all of us can probably... within reason, look and go, probably needed this to slow down and realise and get our priorities straight on what we want long term. I think success is probably that, is just having that headspace as well, because to be honest, I would have probably just kept working myself to the ground. And I'll be honest, like, part of me enjoys that. And that is probably a big lesson as well, that I enjoy working really hard and I don't always think that's that healthy. It's quite detrimental long term. I'm not stupid. I know that I had to stop at some point, so whether it was on my terms or not, it's been a sort of a blessing in some ways.
I think for a lot of us, when we're ambitious anyway, we want to do all the things all the time because it makes us happy, it makes us feel fulfilled, And it also, it's just nice to be busy. But I think it's that busy culture that will hopefully shift now, where it's actually do one thing well and take your time with it, instead of do all these amazing things all the time. Like, we're just going to work until we're burnt out. Because I had that earlier this year, where just before I went on holiday in February, I was so burnt out. I packed everything into, like, all the days that I was in Leeds and travelling so much. And it got to the point where I was, like, physically unwell, but also mentally just exhausted. And you feel like a hypocrite, where you're like, oh, yeah, slow down. And me doing mental health workshops, obviously, I'm, like, telling people to slow down, but actually I'm just there, like, slow down, slow down. Like, so it's about reflection and being honest. And I think we're trying to learn that a little bit more through this. So when we talk about reflecting on what we want, what do you think you want in the next, well, in the next year or so, if you could choose anything?
One thing during lockdown that I've sort of returned to that was like a hobby that I've had since I was a child is a lot of cooking and baking. And it's quite wholesome, and my mum is infuriated with how much I keep making that's fattening. So I'm now just dishing it out to the neighbours, which, you know...
That's lovely.
You know, that's something to do with it.
Yes.
But I enjoy the process of it more than actually the end product, which sounds a bit strange. But I am at my calmest, and my mum has said that as well. I'm at my calmest and probably most serene when I've got my headphones in and I'm just cooking or baking something for everyone. I feel useful. I feel like for once I've disassociated work and my worth away. So my work and writing is a big sense of fulfillment for me and my self-worth, which is problematic because you shouldn't just base on that more than my work. Whereas with baking, like, I might post occasionally if I've, you know, made something that I'm quite proud of, but generally it's off the grid. And I do know deep down at some point I would love to go more into food and drink. And I mean, the magazine I work for is all about food and drink, but that's luxury hotels and stuff. I'm not sort of aiming my sights on that sort of thing, but more, could one day I own a cafe, or could I go and work in a kitchen? I think I've stopped worrying about level of achievement and where I'd fit in that, and just doing something that actually makes me quite happy. And I love writing, but I also love writing about food, and that's something I've not really done a great deal of yet. So to be honest, that is something I'm, you know, really considering, maybe not right away, but it's allowed me to think about it a bit more and stop saying, oh, that's a ridiculous idea, like, you've got no chance there. Like, I'm definitely not the most skilled at it, but I've noticed that it's gotten better over whatever it is, the last 10-11 weeks. And yeah, I'm quite proud of that new skill, so that's something I want to do. And
good,
so that might work.
So what have you been making, tell me? Is it banana bread?
No,
because I love banana bread. It seems to be the millennial bake at the moment.
I do like banana bread, don't get me wrong, but I have this big thing as well, and I don't know if this is me just being obnoxious, but whenever I see everybody jumping on a bandwagon, I've always been a bit like this. I don't like following the crowd. I can't explain it, but it just is this like innate thing like from school, whereas like I knew I wasn't 100% fitting in. I was a bit strange, probably a bit geeky, I don't know, but I've never just done what everyone else done. So I was like, screw that, I'm gonna do something a bit rogue. So I started making ice cream, but without an ice cream maker, which is actually quite hard. And I think I strained my wrist doing it, and gave myself like a repetitive strain injury.
Oh,
but it was a hot cross bun one at Easter time.
What, hot cross?
Yeah.
So what do you...
Right, let me talk you through this.
How
one.
Does that happen?
This is really exciting. So basically, I saw this girl on Instagram, obviously. She's a food stylist, and I was like, wow, that ice cream looks beautiful. And she ended up putting a recipe, which some of them don't do. And basically, it was ginger nuts, ground ginger nuts, which you just sort of roll out with a rolling pin, hot cross buns, toasted, then you cut them into lots of pieces, you blitz it all up. And that's kind of like the crunch element that goes into it. And then you just have double cream and condensed cream. You all sort of mix it together. And then you can put a bit of alcohol in it, if you so wish. I put a bit of brandy in to give it a bit of a kick. And it went down really well, actually. So to be honest, I don't do it for the people, in the sense I'm not really bothered about the gratification side of it. But my brother is someone who will often eat the cakes and things I make, so I'm basically just looking at him like eagle-eyed, like, what do you think, is it good? He's like I've not even tasted it yet, Jenny, calm down.
I can smell it though. You want to eat it though, don't
go on, have it. And he's like, you can't keep feeding me cake. I was like, I can do it, and I will. That one I was pretty proud of. And then I just cook by sort of cooking a lot of the meals at home. I like doing a lot of curries and things like that. I made a pie last week, which I was quite proud of, because pastry is such an effort, and I'm really impatient.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm so impatient.
What is it?
On reflection, when I got to the lid bit and the pastry was ripping in half, I was close to just going back out to the shops. But, you know, it wasn't an essential, so I persevered. And 4 hours later, I had a pie. So, yeah, basically, I like doing that because it kills a lot of time. And I do find when you're furloughed, like, the days do feel extremely long. So, I find it's quite a therapeutic way to spend your time rather than, like, mindlessly watching TV, which is something I've never really been good at, because I always feel a bit guilty when I'm sat there watching TV.
Yeah. So, you've been baking, and that's bloody brilliant. It's interesting because it's quite a mindful thing to do. I know that Cafe 164 in Leeds, shout out to them, they did something called Bread for Your Head. So, they did, like, a bread-making class.
Oh, that's great.
It's that process of just focusing on whatever you're doing with your hands or whatever, and just gently going with the flow and not thinking about anything else that's going on. So I think that's a good tip for everybody to get baking a little bit more and being a bit more mindful, slowing down.
You can also find a lot of stuff in your cupboards. So I've got this cookbook called Tin Can Magic. She's a chef in Edinburgh called Jess Jenninson, and she's basically said, unfortunately, cooking and food is also down to ingredients and accessibility, which I completely agree with. Unfortunately, like, a lot of food writing is, you know, very middle class, because also, like, they can afford to go and get, like, ridiculous ingredients that a lot of people haven't got access to, and that is just the simple fact, really. Whereas she's looking at tins in the cupboard that you might have had for years. So, like, cherries you might have sitting there, you might have condensed milk for some unknown reason. We have a lot of chickpeas and, like, you know, like, beans that we never know what to do with. And she seems to have a recipe for all of them, like butter beans, so wouldn't you know where to start? And then there's a really nice sugo, which is basically like an Italian sort of ragu type thing that she makes with them. And it's super easy, and they're really cheap to make. So I think that's also taught me to be a bit more, you know, economical of what I'm making and stuff. And just use up what we already have, because it's really wasteful just buying fresh ingredients all the time. You can make something really nice with, like, stuff in your cupboard.
I love how resourceful you've been in the furlough situation. So what I'd like to know is, like, what's been that process for you of doing so much and then being forced to slow down?
In all honesty, it doesn't suit me. The first 2 weeks were fine, because I think what I did in my head is compartmentalise, and I was like, this is like a holiday. And my mum was like, this is like a holiday.
I'm getting paid to have a holiday.
Yeah, she was like, treat it like a holiday, because in my head I was like, well, within reason, I could go away for 2 weeks at a time. I don't generally, but I could. And then I hit sort of a stumbling block in week three, and I could feel like I felt like I was useless. And I was finding it really hard to overcome. And also, my motivation dipped massively. And I'm really motivated. It's kind of personality trait, for want of a better way of explaining it. And I found it extremely difficult to let go and also just give myself a break and be a bit kinder to myself and go, you know, you didn't put yourself in this situation. And some weeks are not going to be 100%. You're going to feel very flat. But I really felt like hiding. I felt like I couldn't, you know, I've not felt that probably worried about my mental health in a long time, since university, when I was in a similar situation where I didn't know where to put myself. And I was like, well, you technically still have a job, but it's not 100% certain, and that's no one's fault. That's the circumstances we all find ourselves in. And I thought, oh my God, what do I do? And I think in the day I was kind of coping by not acknowledging it, and I was going to bed very, like, freaked out and panicking. But I'm probably, like, 5 or 6 weeks now. 5, I think. I'm getting there. Like, I've just decided that I'll set a short to-do list, and if I can get through it, then great. And obviously you can go and see people now, so I'm seeing, like, friends going for walks and things
socially
like that.
Distant, awkward waves.
Socially distant, like, awkward waves. The most peculiar way to greet a friend. You know, like, you want to give them a hug because that's just social and cultural norm, isn't it?
I had that. My friends came over with their little boy Jack, and he's not even 2 yet, but he doesn't obviously understand the concept of, like, no touching or anything, and he, like, came towards me and tried to touch me, and I'm like, I can't even, like, push you away, I'm so sorry. It felt weird, though, that seeing people not being able to interact in the same ways. But it's nice to obviously see them.
Yeah.
But you just have to take every day as it comes. Like, I've had so many ups and downs, like, really quite highs and lows of just what is happening, and I think everyone's going through it in some fashion. How are you feeling now? Are you feeling a little bit...
Generally better, yeah. Generally sort of just gave myself a break. I mean, exercise is a big one for me, but always has been. Yeah. So I've always been quite into my like competitive running and things like that. But I've actually not done that much in lockdown. Like, I went through a weird spate of it in April. I was quite into it again. But then I thought, actually, you're not enjoying it, you're just enduring it. And you're just doing it because you can.
That's it.
Like, because you're allowed to go and run outside and stuff. When actually I go to the gym a lot and I usually spend like a good hour there. Whereas at home, I've just not had the same enthusiasm for it anymore. So it's been difficult for me again in this comparison thing of seeing lots of people. Oh, I've just found exercise. I've just started doing this. Whereas I've been doing it for years. Yeah. And then all of a sudden my motivation just went... came to a standstill and was like, I don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. So instead, my compromise is doing sort of, you know, these online YouTube, either Joe Wicks or like someone, you know, his positivity is a lot higher than mine generally. So, you know, even just 20 minutes of that is better than nothing. And I think just accepting that your body also needs to rest as well. And if you're just exercising every day nonstop, that's not actually probably helpful.
And I think it's also the transition in environments. Mm. Obviously, if you're at your folks' house, I'm in mine, you don't necessarily have the same tools to go about your day-to-day life either. You just feel like you're kind of floating around in your butterfly bedroom of just like, this isn't my room, and that can be a bit disorientating. So what's that been like?
It's been all right. I mean, I've generally been back at my mum's for a little while because I'm sort of hopefully saving for a flat in the future. I mean,
same.
So I don't know where we're up to with that now. That's obviously like job dependent, but you know, generally we all get on pretty well. My mum is working full-time, she's a HR director, so she's particularly busy right now. And in the daytime,
yeah, I can imagine.
Me and my brother sort of just hang out a bit. I mean, he doesn't, you know, we have completely different sleep cycles. Like I'm, like I said to you earlier, I'm up at the crack of dawn, which is not a good thing. I think everyone I tell is like, oh my God, I'm so jealous. And like, really don't be. It's not a good thing. It's I can't even help it. Like I'm awake and I can't lie there. So he's not up till like lunchtime. So in a weird way, we all have our different times of the day. I've never ever been able to do that. But I think that's just how I treat time and productivity. I'm like, that is such a waste. But then I'm like, well,
I know, me too.
You know, like do your, you do you, mate, because he's just finished. Well, he's not finished university. He's at Leeds. He's just finished his second year. So he's looking for placements, but also considering if he's going to go back. And I think it's difficult for me to watch that because I know exactly how it feels to be 2021 and be very confused about your options. And he probably looks at me going, well, you do have a job. You're just not doing it. Yeah. So I think what's interesting in a household of different ages and different, so my mum's not furloughed, I'm furloughed and he doesn't have a job, it's actually really interesting to sort of take a step back and go, we're all dealing with something here, and just be a bit nicer, because it's easy to lose your rag with people when you're in close proximity to them for what is it, almost 12 weeks with no break.
It's magnified. It's like in my household as well, like my mum's been furloughed, I have lost lots of work, but I'm still like doing bits and bats of things.
Yeah.
And then my dad's trying to work from home and he's on like a pasting table.
Yeah.
We don't have like desks.
Yeah.
Or I'm on like a little chest of drawers right now.
Yeah.
And that is hard because we're all going through it in our own different ways. Mm. We're going into a world now that will probably change in terms of work. So working from home, hopefully flexi time.
Yeah.
Who knows? So what do you think is going to happen for a lot of people in the workplace?
I think you'll find that a lot of workplaces won't be set up for social distancing, and it's going to be sort of a make-do situation for a lot. And I think you'll have staggered working conditions where you might have X amount of staff in one day and then they only do so many days a week in the office. As you'll see, like massive companies like Twitter saying they can all work from home now, you know, definitely. I think you'll see similar size conglomerates doing the same, but I think for smaller businesses it's going to be a lot more difficult. I mean, my work's really linked to hospitality. I feel very sorry for people that have small restaurants, bars, even hotels, yeah. Because that must just be, you must just feel at a complete loss, because to work you need to be serving and you need people to be doing it. So I don't think there's going to be a measure that suits all businesses, and I think it is going to be very much muddling through. I've had quite a few jobs in the time that we've known each other, because that's how journalism sort of is, really. So part of me is quite flexible to the fact that I'll have to work from home, or I'll have to take up freelance work, or I'll have to keep adapting. But a lot of people are very much used to their steady 9 to 5 going into the office. So already they'll have had to adapt in the last 10 weeks or so. And then I think they'll realise when they go to work, it's not going to be like it used to be. It's going to be very impersonal, actually, in some senses. You're not going to have the meetings in the same way. You're not going to have lunch breaks in the same way. But I think the working world was sort of changing before this. So if anything, it's just facilitating and sort of speeding that up a little bit. But, you know, I don't think any of us know definitely, because at the moment we don't know how long coronavirus is going to be a thing. It could be something that plagues us forevermore. It could be as common as the cold or the flu. And until the science sort of advances and we get the vaccine or a form of treatment, I think the way we work and just generally live is still going to be very different. And I don't know, some of that might be good. I think it's good to reassess where we're at, because I don't think it was a good system to begin with.
It wasn't working before.
It wasn't working for a lot of people before, and a lot of people were very deeply unhappy. And I think you can look at the events of the past week or so and just see, like, actually how broken and sad things were for a lot of people before.
We've had to become uncomfortable in being open and responding to things that have been systemic for a long time. Mm. We've got to be allies. We've got to really make those changes now. And we've got the opportunity to reflect more so than we ever have in the past, hundreds of years?
Yeah.
It's great to reflect and see how can we now create those changes that will enable everybody to benefit from it positively. So I think the workplace will change, and I think I'm hoping with the way things are going and how people are rising up and making those changes that we will see actual change. So we'll just have to wait and see. I think we've got, you know, we're all got to band together, and I think we're seeing that so much more in lockdown.
I think
so I can't wait to see what happens.
I think the culture of it was changing anyway, and in recent events and what's happened, I think the spirit was already there. And you're right, what you just said, it is uncomfortable. But that's kind of the point, isn't it? You can't just be comfortable all the time in any sense of the word. And you do have to look in on yourself and, like, your communities and who you speak to and how you speak about topics. Like, ignorance isn't an excuse in any sense. So, yeah, we will have to see. And I think it's very sad, but it's also, like, it's time that we do collectively take a bit more responsibility. Rather than be quiet and just let it pass and hope it passes over, as a lot of people have done in the past.
It's not just a trend.
Yeah.
And I think with social media, you just see trends and things pop up. Oh, something's happened, and then it tails off. No, it needs to be. Things need to change every day. We need to be more reflective every day.
Mm.
And I think we are doing that, and in more so in recent weeks. So hopefully when we come back to a slight normality, we can start to make real changes. And we just need to make change. Like, obviously the world wasn't working before coronavirus and before the recent events, so it's nice to see us reflect and see what is success, what is a mentally healthy society, what is an equal society. Make people uncomfortable with being comfortable in being ignorant. It's about shifting that focus. I think we are doing it.
Yeah.
So Jenna, thank you ever so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So where can we... You're welcome. So where can we find more about your work?
For Norflass, we're just norflass.com, I believe. Frantically checks her computer. NRTHLASS.com. And then we're on Instagram, the same, just Norflass, or one word, lowercase, and exactly the same on Twitter. And you'll find both me and Jess on there as well. If you ever want to reach out, we're always looking for people to either contribute or to put themselves forward. I think that's a big thing. Like, you don't be scared, because we're all doing something important. And it's not just the creative industries, it's literally anything. Like, that's what our latest series is trying to show. There's so many different careers you could do and places you can do it, but the North is like a real hub of talent. So please do get in touch with either me or Jess, like, because we're always receptive and willing. Yeah, by all means, just contact either one of us and we'll get back to you as quick as we can.
And with that, folks, thank you so much for listening, and as always, keep it real. Find more of our episodes on soundrebel.co.uk, and don't forget to like and subscribe.